Theater, ladies and gentlemen, we invite Alan, Kenny Baker, Portland Hoff Bone, the winner of the Technical College University of Texas, and Al Goodman Melody, brought to you by the More Than From Coast to Coast. Ladies and gentlemen, next week, we in this country pay tribute to the Bill of Rights. Republican and Democratic parties both agree that our American Constitution is the strongest in the world. Tonight, we bring you the party with the weakest constitution, Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you. I can remember when I was king-sized, Jimmy. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And before anything hilarious occurs, Mr. Wallington, in rebuttal to your opening remarks, may I ask, what is wrong with my Constitution?
For one thing, it could use a few amendments.
You really mean that? Well, I wouldn't talk about my Constitution with that flushed complexion of yours, Mr. Wallington. You look as though you had just had a ketchup transfusion, if it's anything to you. Your face is as red as an Indian's kneecap.
For your information, Mr. Allen...
Have you ever seen an Indian with a short blanket? I mean, you realize the simile here.
Oh, I see.
Have you ever seen an Indian? Oh, let it go.
No, but I just want to tell you something, Mr. Allen.
Yeah?
Just for your information, I am not red. I'm ruddy.
You are ruddy for an oxygen tent, if you know.
Why, I'm in great shape. Every day I go to a gym.
Well, you go to a gym? Well, so do I. Well,
what does your gym do for you?
Well, my gym doesn't send me pretty flowers, brother. And before you start singing the chorus, Jimmy, I shall turn nimbly as only I can to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. Washington, D.C., Division of Simplified Practice of the National Bureau of Standards calls a conference to discuss the shortening of toothpicks. Texaco News interviews the man in the street to get his reaction to the new toothpick legislation. Now, our first guest at this time is Dr. Rancid Squirm. You are... And he lives up to his name, as you can see. Fore and aft. He looked rancid, and he's squirming as he stands here. Well, you are an authority on the toothpick, Dr. Squirm.
Yes, wood has been my life's work.
Wood has, huh? Have you, how did you first get interested in wood, Doctor?
As a little boy, I had shingles.
That started you off?
Yes, at college I specialized in trigonometry.
In trigonometry, huh? And then?
In 1910, I conducted my great experiment.
Your great experiment? What was that, Doctor?
I planted myself underground with an acorn.
Both of you underground, you and the acorn, huh?
Yes, a friend watered us daily.
That was starting in 1910.
Yes. In 1925, Ripley found me growing out of an oak tree, none the worse for my experiments.
You were found growing out of an oak tree 15... You lived for 15 years as part of a tree?
Yes.
Well, has it bothered you in later life, Doctor?
Oh, no, not at all. Of course, I still have bird's nests under my arm.
Well, naturally.
Yes, I have moss growing up my right leg.
Oh, you have? Well, I thought you had on a green puttee, Doctor. It's moss, eh?
No, and you see, when I take off my hat...
What are those holes in your head, Doctor?
Woodpeckers.
Well, I must say that you are just the man to take over. You've also lived in a tree so long, you laid an egg here. I must say that you are just the man to take over our wood conservation campaign, Dr. Squirm. Are you conserving wood in radio?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I'm taking Barry Wood off the hit parade.
Yes?
I'm cutting the woodwind down in all orchestras.
You are? How?
I'm making all piccolos shorter.
You're shortening the piccolo? But the piccolo is pretty short now, Doctor.
When I get through, a man playing a piccolo will look as though he's smelling a Tootsie Roll.
It will be short and sweet, in other words. Well, this is all mighty interesting, Dr. Squirm, but what about the toothpick?
The toothpick. The toothpick today is 2 5/10 inches long.
Yes?
It will be shortened 2/10 of an inch.
2/10 of an inch?
Exactly.
Well, how much wood can you save? I don't get it.
Nobody gets it. That is the general idea.
You are trying to confuse people intentionally?
Oh, yes. When the toothpick is shortened...
Yes?
You won't see the points.
Well, that is putting it bluntly, and thank you, no end, Dr. Rancid Square. A hillbilly Bell... How did he get out of here? Did anyone hear him leave? A hillbilly Bell, who has her opinion of the toothpick shortening, is Miss Gansey Dowdy. That's right, isn't it, Miss Gansey Dowdy?
Yes, sir.
Has the new model toothpick bothered you, Gansey?
I'm in a swivet right now.
You are? How do you mean?
Well, I got buck teeth.
Yes, I see you have buck teeth.
Well, my two front teeth jut out like a beaver's.
Yes, you look as though you're coughing up a mahjong set from here.
I can eat corn on the cob through a Venetian blind.
Nice to know. We'll put some up if we ever ask you over in corn season. But about the toothpick, Gansey.
Well, I used to tote a toothpick day and night.
You did? Why?
Well, my front teeth are out so fur. Stuff keeps blowing in them.
Stuff keeps blowing in your teeth? Well, what sort of stuff?
Oh, gravel, twigs, clinkers, and all sorts of berries in season.
Oh, berries in season. I see.
Every night before going to bed, I'd set out the coal hod.
Yes?
Then I'd take my toothpick, prod my buck teeth, and jimmy out all the rubbish.
You jimmy out your teeth, eh? Now, and with this new bobbed toothpick...
Well, I had to give it up. Pick's too short.
The pick's too short, eh? Well, how are you cleaning your front teeth now, Gansey?
I got new system.
Oh, you have? Well, how do you work it?
Well, first I set out the coal hod, same as before.
Yes?
Then I take my old man's fiddle...
Yeah?
Put a pinch of pepper up my nose...
Yes?
When I sneeze...
Yes?
My two buck teeth snap between them strings...
Your teeth snap over the strings, yes?
There's a chord in G flat, and the rubbish falls into the coal hod.
Well,
falls out into the coal hod.
Well,
falls out.
That's a very
rubbish falls out into the coal hod.
Well, that's a very well, how do you musical dental floss? In other words,
yeah.
Well, how do you get the fiddle off your face later?
I goose grease the string.
You do?
They slip out and eat anything. So,
well, this wood conservation has sure caused you plenty of trouble.
What?
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 Caused you plenty of
trouble.
How, Gans?
Could be worth a cut down the handles on vacuum cleaners.
Yes?
I sure will be holding the bag.
Well, that's one way to get all the dirt, and thank you, Gansey Dowdy. And now a man who has his own philosophy is Waldemar Kunkel. What is your reaction to the new abbreviated toothpick, Mr. Kunkel?
Well, to me, the length of them calorie niblicks don't make no, never mind.
Don't you ever use toothpicks?
Not me. I got my own routine.
Well, what is your routine, Walter, Mr. Kunkel?
Well, I only got one tooth there, you see.
Oh, it is a Lulu, isn't it?
When I open my mouth, it looks like an elk wearing a red vest.
or a graveyard in Red Bank, you might say.
Well, I'm a big eater.
You're a big eater? Well, how do you carry on your gluttony with only one tooth?
Well, luckily, my tooth is right in the middle of my mouth.
Oh, dead center, isn't it?
Yeah, whatever I'm eating, I put right in the middle of me plate.
I see.
Then I bend my head down and steer it.
You spear it, huh? And then?
Then I wolf it around inside my mouth till my tooth gets tired.
Yes?
Then I swallow it whole. Swallow it whole. Swallow it whole.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, that's why I don't eat no toothpick.
Well, you do take oral precautions, though, Mr. Kunkel.
Oh, you bet. After I'm finished eating...
Yes?
I take a mouthful of coffee and sluice it around in my mouth.
You sluice it around, eh? Well, that's
fine. Then, just in case...
Yes?
I open my mouth, let me tooth hang out.
You let it hang out, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Then I rim me tooth with this finger.
Well, no wonder. Well, no wonder. Well, no wonder. Well, no wonder. No wonder the toothpick... No wonder the toothpick shortening holds no terrors for you.
Only one thing bothers me.
You mean with the wood conservation?
Yeah, I hope they shorten all pool cues.
Why?
If I'm going to end up behind the eight ball.
Yes?
I'd like to be nearer to it now.
Yes, you might as well. You won't have so far to go in later life, and thank you, Waldemere Kunkel. Well, that about concludes our...
I beg your pardon.
Falstaff Openshaw.
The shoddy Swinburne at your service.
Well, where have you been?
The warden sends his regards. Need I say more?
You have really been in jail?
I didn't get this haircut at Harvard.
I should say not. Well, never mind that. Now, those poems you grapevined out the past few weeks were really terrible.
I have written some others.
Well, that is your misfortune.
Have you heard, when I called her dear, her face lit up because she had a lantern jaw?
No, I haven't.
I'm doing no harm in this grain car brakeman. I am only feeling my oats.
No, I haven't heard that.
Or, don't roll that stranger's dice, mother. They're loaded, and so is he.
Now, wait a minute. Look, tonight we are discussing the digest toothpick and wood conservation.
Precisely why I am here.
You?
I have written a song about wood conservation.
A song?
Yes. I have brought the San Quentin Jubilee Singers here to render it.
Oh, these are the San Quentin Jubilee Singers here? A small and untidy group, I must say. Well, what is your song called?
What will become of the old oaken bucket?
Well, for the wood conservation. Now, well, how does it go?
Give us the key, 2792.
Okay. When the Bureau of Standards starts calling a conference to shorten the toothpick, it's time to rebel. In place of things wooden, we'll soon have a substitute, and the old oaken bucket will be gone from the well. When the bucket is gone, and it may not be long, instead of old oaken bucket, we'll be singing this song. Oh, gone is the bucket, the old oaken bucket, a big Dixie cup, it now hangs in a box.
Thank you, Falstaff and the San Quentin Jubilee Singers. And now, from the vocal riffraff, we turn to the king of song, Kenny Baker, with Al Goodman and his orchestra cooperating. Kenny's first song is Begin the Begin.
Of music, so can I. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars, and down by the shore an orchestra's playing, and even the palms seem to be swaying. When they begin the begin. We'll live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart, and there we are swearing to love forever, and promising never, never to part. Divine, what rapine, what rapine, what rapine, what rapine. Each serene dispersed the joys we had tasted, and now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin. Begin like the dead desire I only remember when they begin the begin. Oh, yes, let them begin the begin, make them play till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you. And we suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the begin. When they begin the begin.
Say, Jimmy.
Yes, Fred?
Jimmy, this letter here, I think, got mixed in with my fan mail this week. The other one was for me. I think this one is for you.
What does it say, Fred?
It says, let me see, I opened it by mistake, of course. It
says
here, dear friend, I know my car should be protected against cold weather, but just how? Should I have my wife knit a cozy for the exhaust pipe? Should I buy a pair of ski pants for the car's rear end? Please advise me, signed Perplexed. Can you answer this, Jimmy? Might as well do it now.
Surely. Take a letter, Fred.
All right, I'll take it right away. Okay.
Dear Perplexed, as a car owner, you know you should protect your car's vital parts right now against cold weather. You want easier starts, easier shifting of gears, a smoother ride all winter long. And that's what your Texaco dealer offers you with his complete winter conditioning. The right winter grade of insulated Havoline or Texaco motor oil in your crankcase means not only motor protection, but also quicker starts, less waste of gasoline, less strain on your battery. And you'll have a much easier riding car, too, when your Texaco dealer completes his winter conditioning with Texaco's famous Marfax chassis lubrication service. So start now driving a safer car, a better performing car. See your Texaco dealer without delay for complete winter conditioning. Signed, respectfully yours, Jimmy Wallington.
I'll mail it right away, Jimmy. Comes now, ladies and gentlemen, our guest. At this time, may I present...
Mr. Allen!
Well, Portman. You bear tidings this evening, do you?
Yes. Did you hear Jack Benny Sunday night?
Did I hear who?
Jack Benny?
Yes, yes. I heard old locked-in flavor. I heard him. I let him out for a half an hour on the Sabbath.
Well, didn't you think Jack was swell as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde?
Well, I couldn't tell which was which. You know, when Benny plays Dr. Jekyll without his toupee, you can see Hyde through what's left of his head. Two characters in the one suit that way. Say, what is that? What is that? That book you have there?
Oh, it's a French dictionary.
French, really?
Oi, oi.
Oi, oi. Well, what is that?
Oi means yes in French. It's spelled O-U-I.
Oh, that's we. We means yes in French. What do you need with a dictionary, Portland? Are you pressing a flower or something?
No. Our guest tonight is French, isn't she?
Yes, she's Miss Simone Simone, the famous French actress. And we are going to greet Miss Simone in English.
We're not going to show off?
No, we are not flaunting our... Huh? You say a joke under your breath that only you can. No, we are not going to show off linguistically this evening. You know, every time we have tried to salute a guest in her native tongue, we have put our... we've opened our collective mouth and put our collective foot in it. Now, remember Carmen Miranda and remember Anna May Wong?
Yes, they gave it to you good.
Yes, they did. In assorted languages, they gave it to me. I had to have two interpreters to know when I was insulted. Well, tonight, I'm not taking any chances, Portland. I am greeting Miss Simone in English.
But what if she answers you in French?
We'll all be out of here 20 minutes early. We'll all be...
Why don't you play safe, Mr. Allen?
Play safe? How?
you welcome Simone in English, and let Kenny and me welcome her in French.
Why, that's a sensational idea, Portland. You know, that way we won't be taking any chances. Where's Kenny?
Oh, Kenny.
Now, wait a minute, Kenny. What is the idea of paging yourself?
That wasn't me.
Well, I distinctly heard two calls.
This studio has an echo.
Yeah?
Every time I sing, I hear myself.
You sing, you hear yourself?
Yeah.
Well, don't you like yourself?
Sure, but I keep wanting to stop in the middle of my songs to yell, Bravo!
Oh, now, look, there's no echo in here, Kenny, or I'd have had to stop every 5 minutes to hiss myself since last October. Now, let's get going. You have got to master some French in a hurry this evening.
French? You mean that stuff they write on cologne bottles?
Yes, Kenny. You and I are going to greet our guest in French.
Well, who is it, Porty?
Simone.
There goes that echo again every time.
No. That isn't an echo, Kenny. Simone is our guest star. Now, look, you see this word here in this French dictionary, bienvenue?
Bienvenue?
Yes. Well, bienvenue... Bienvenue means welcome. Now, when Miss Simone comes in, I am going to say, welcome, Miss Simone, in English, you see. And you and Portland will say, bienvenue, mademoiselle. You see, that means miss in French, mademoiselle. Now, have you got that?
Bienvenue, mademoiselle.
Very good. Good. Now, we can't go wrong. And now, ladies and gentlemen, may I present Hollywood's most charming importation, the popular international screen star, Miss Simone. Well, welcome, Miss Simone.
Bienvenue, mademoiselle.
Well, Miss Simone?
Nous, gentlemen, was machst du?
Well, we have done it again. Where did you ever pick up those words?
Well, while you're rehearsing to greet me...
Yes?
Mr. Goodman is rehearsing me to greet you.
Mr. Goodman. New Lanceman was marched to? That is Mr. Goodman at his pure Castilian best.
I have said something wrong, no?
No, Simone. You have said something right, yes. But you haven't met your fan club, have you? Now, this is Portland, Miss Simone.
How do you do, Portland? Oi, oi, mademoiselle.
The Goodman has also left his mark on you, Portland. And this, Miss Simone, is Kenny Baker.
Hello, Kenny Baker. I have heard you sing.
Oui.
You are très bien.
Mercy, mademoiselle.
Now, along, Kenny.
I don't get you, F.A.
Along, Kenny. Allez beaucoup.
Give it to me in English, Pop.
Scram.
That I can understand.
Ah, well, you... Well, Miss Simone and I are going to parlay the voo around a little. Simone?
If you say so, big boy.
Well, fine. Now, I have some very interesting questions to ask you.
Good. Can I have a 64-franc question first?
The 64-franc question? Well, this isn't a quiz program. We just ask questions on this program because we're nosy, you see. Now, I have some questions here that I don't think you've ever been asked before.
That will be novel.
Yes, it will. Now, first... All right, now. First, how do you like New York?
New York is wonderful. New York is everything.
Oh, well, not everything, Simone. We don't have those famous famous wines you have in France.
No, but here you have the wonderful Brooklyn champagne.
Brooklyn champagne?
Yes, sir. It is, how do you call it? Pepsi Cola?
Pepsi Cola? That is the champagne that only costs a nickel.
Yes, but the bubbles, it's tickle.
Fine. Now, my next unusual question here is, what do you think of New York, its sights, and its skyline?
Oh, it is wonderful. When New York lights up at night, it looks like une grande épingle boule automate.
Épingle boule automate? Well, what is that?
A pinball machine.
What do you think of American men?
American men are all very handsome.
Well, thank you.
You are American?
I get it in any language. I don't know. I see what you mean. Now, tell me, how do you like our American food, Simone?
I like very much donuts.
Donuts, huh?
I like very much to plonger.
Plonger? Plonger with a donut? What is that?
Plonger in French is dunking.
Oh, it is? Well, you see here, plonger is something else again. But tell me, Simone, quiet now, you try to get along. Tell me, Simone, do you enjoy American humor? You know, American jokes and wisecracks.
I always laugh at American jokes, but I do not know what they mean.
Well, perhaps now, if I told you an American story in French tonight, you might have a better idea of our humor.
Oh, that would be funny.
Well, now, don't be too sure. If I get stuck with some of the French words, why, you can help me out.
Wait.
Now, wait a minute. Don't laugh yet. Wait till I tell the story.
It is good?
Well, that will be up to you, of course. Now, here's the story. I'm going to tell it in French, and you follow me closely. Uh-huh. Bonjour. Un Indien promenait un petit cheval. Comprenez?
Wait. An Indian was riding on a little horse.
A little horse, a pony. Comprenez, pony?
Oui, pony.
Pony. Derrière l'Indien, ses squaws allaient à pied. Comprenez?
Oui. The Indian squaw was walking along behind.
Uh-huh. Un homme du full of brush. Un homme du full of brush. They promenade an automobile on Lincoln Highway.
A full of brush.
Yeah, full of brush.
A full of brush. A full of brush man driving an automobile on Lincoln Highway.
Uh-huh. L'homme du full of brush, pour l'Indien, et arrête le Model T.
A full of brush man saw the Indian and stopped his Model T.
Oui, oui. An Indian, you did. Comment se fait, jerk? Which is the same in any language. Comment se fait, jerk? Que vous promenez un petit cheval et votre squaw allait à pied. Comprenez?
The full of brush man says to the Indian, why are you riding a pony, jerk,
uh-huh,
when your squaw has to walk?
Oui, a l'Indien dit... petit cheval.
And the Indian said, ooh, squaw has no pony.
Fini.
Fini?
Oui, fini.
Oh.
You see? Now you like American humor, huh?
Very much. You see, I laugh.
Yes, you did laugh. Fine.
But I still don't understand.
Well, I might as well give up then. It's been very nice of you to pay us this little visit.
And it's been very nice of you to pay me this little salary.
don't mention it, Simone.
Oh, but before I go...
Yes?
I would like to talk about what you're going to pay me for my appearance tonight.
Well, there's a time and place for everything, Simone.
But I'm very worried.
We'll discuss your salary later.
But I do not understand American money.
You what?
I don't know one coin from another.
Oh, well, now, before it slips my mind, perhaps we'd better discuss your salary, Simone.
You will explain American money to me?
I shall explain the money and how.
Oh, thank you.
Now, it's like this, Simone. You see, money...
Oh, isn't anybody going to stop this?
Beat it. Now, beat it, Kenny.
Please, Miss Simone, don't let Mr. Allen explain money to you.
Why not?
He explained money to me when I signed my contract.
What happened?
Sister, I ain't behind that counter at Sloppy Joe's because I like pineapple juice.
Go along, Kenny. I'll take care of this. I can explain. I can go along with the gag. I can explain money. I can explain money to Miss Simone as well as the next fellow.
Are you listening, Mr. Morgenthau?
Now, quiet, Kenny, please.
Now, go ahead, Mr. Allen.
Now, just what is it that you don't understand about our money, Simone?
Well, you're going to pay me for tonight $1,000.
Uh-huh.
$1,000 what?
Ah, what? This is where I start explaining. Now, I could give you $1,000 or 1,000 quarters. I might even give you 1,000 nickels.
Nickels sound good.
Nickels are good. Nickels are wonderful. You know, dollars get all dirty. They pick up germs. Dollars make a nasty lump in your stocking when you're out.
Dollars are no good.
Oh, they bend in the middle and everything, dollars. What are dollars? They're nothing but old paper.
And what are nickels?
Oh, nickels are beautiful, Simone. Shiny little gems of metal. You know, you can't put a dollar in the slot at the automat. We. You can't put a dollar in a subway turnstile. We. You can't put a dollar in a pay telephone. We. But a nickel, you can put in all of those things. We.
Nickels sound good.
Oh, fine. Nickels sound good, and nickels it is. Now, tomorrow, I shall pay you in nickels. I shall send over a lot of packages, 1,000 nickels. We.
But you will do me one favor, Mr. Adams.
We?
The nickels. You will send in small packages. We.
I shall wrap each nickel individually. Anything to please you.
You're very kind. But one thing.
Yes?
About these dollars. I am very curious.
Yes?
So, you will please to wrap up the pretty little nickels in the dirty old dollars, we?
Oui, mademoiselle.
Bonsoir, Monsieur Allen.
Au revoir, Mater Harry, alias... Come on. Thank you very much. Well, that brings us to Kenny Baker again. Loyally supported by Al Goodman's orchestra, Kenny sings Shepherd's Serenade.
I strolled away from the throng. Gone the plans that were once so gay, and gone the hopes held so long. Dusk was slowly falling on the leaves. The birds were hushed in every tree. Suddenly, so bright, so strong, down from the hill came a song. I heard a lonely shepherd playing. It was a haunting melody. I heard the music clearly saying, that he was happy as could be. He played and he played. The world was forgotten, like castles in air. My every care began to fade. If he would shepherd's serenade.
Message from Larry Elliott about pride problems and a promise. First, a word about pride.
Like millions of other Americans, the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers are proud of the fact that they are in business for themselves. Each one operates a private local business in his own community, a business identified with Texaco because its owner prefers to sell Texaco quality products.
Now the problems.
Today, like most other local businessmen, Texaco dealers face new problems brought about by the nation's defense effort, by the displacement of manpower, by extraordinary demands for materials.
And a promise.
But under any circumstances, your local Texaco dealer will continue to do his best to serve you and his entire community, and at the same time do his share for defense.
Just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Fred Allen returns to welcome the University of Texas' most talented undergraduates to the Texaco Star Theater. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WABC, New York.
Each week, ladies and gentlemen, on the campus of one of America's institutions of higher education, the students conduct an election to determine the most talented undergraduate attending their particular university. The prize is an all-expense trip to New York City to appear in the Texaco Star Theater as a guest of Fred Allen, plus a cash award of $200. Now, Fred, are you ready to present tonight's winner?
Yes, Larry. From the famous 40 Acres campus at Austin, Texas, we bring you the University of Texas' most talented undergraduate, Joseph Phipps. Congratulations, Joe. What do you know? Here you are on the Texaco show. And welcome, Joseph.
Well, thank you, Mr. Allen.
Well, now that you are up here in what is so laughingly called the big town, what would you like to see?
Well, being as this is the big town, I think I'd like to see everything. Some of the big radio shows, one or two of the legitimate plays,
yeah.
Associated Press Office, the Empire State Building.
Uh-huh. And... Well, you know, you can go up on top of the Empire State Building for $1.10. And if you want to see Al Smith, it's 15 cents extra, I think. Open a window and he looks out, I believe.
Well, Mr. Allen, I've heard a lot about the Stork Club, too.
Well, it's cheaper to see Al Smith. There's no cover. But tell me, how does New York compare to Austin, Texas?
Well, I suppose New York is a bigger city than Austin, but... Then Texas is the largest state in New York State, too.
That's right. It's 50-50, isn't it? Texas is the largest state in the Union.
That's right. Well, you could pick up the city of New York and carry it down there.
Now, wait a minute. Joe. There's only one man alive who can carry the city of New York, and he's Mayor LaGuardia. Yes, sir. The mayor carries New York every 4 years and then sets it down for 4 years to get his wind back. But Texas is a great state, Joe. You have a lot of things down there that we sure don't have up here.
Well, I think that's right, Mr. Allen. For example, have you ever seen 7 million head of cattle all jammed in the same corral?
Did you ever ride in our subway, Joe? It's the same idea without the horns. I understand that Texas had a great football team this year, Joseph.
Yes, sir, that's one thing we did, Hal. We started off like a house of fire the first of the year and won all of our first games.
And then something happened?
The football team got a big write-up in Life magazine.
Got a write-up in Life magazine, and after that?
The next two games, we tied one and lost one.
After Life, there was no hope, huh? And Texas is playing its postseason game behind the 8-Bowl this year, isn't it?
Well, it might look that way to some people, Mr. Allen, but we have several boys on the team there. I'm sure they're going to make most of the All-Americans.
Well, I hope so, Joe. Texas must be a great university.
Yes, we do have a fine school, Mr. Allen. From the original 40 acres, the university has grown now to more than 200 acres.
200 acres. You know, if that happened in Rhode Island, your college would have grown out of the state. But tell me, is Texas a wealthy college?
Well, not especially wealthy. Financial pressure has been much less, though, since 1923. That was when oil was discovered on University of Texas land. Oil's what keeps the university going.
What do you think keeps me going, Joe?
Well,
sort of oil conscious here on the Texaco program. Our orchestra conductor, Al Goodman, used to slick his hair down with chicken fat when he first came on the program. Now he marfax his toupee, as he said. But about your college, Joseph, is there any other important data?
Well, there sure is. You see, we have a Senate group there in the university, law school, and they've elected you an honorary member of the Senate.
An honorary member of that Senate. Well, that's very nice, Joe.
And the boys there at the law school, they asked me to present you with a 10-gallon hat.
Well, thank you, Joseph. This is it, a 10-gallon hat, and I have a 2-quart head. Now, I want to ask you... Joe, I'm very grateful to you and to the Senate student group at the law school for their kindness tonight.
Well, there's just one thing about that hat. It's a $50 hat, and we hope it fits.
If it costs $50, Joe, it's going to fit if I have to get a set of lumps on my head.
Now that you have a real cowboy hat, I'd like to extend to you an invitation to attend the Texas Roundup next spring.
Yes, Governor Stevenson sent me a wire inviting me too, Joseph. It was very nice of him. And I tell you, I may come down as a spectator. You know, I'm not much of a horseman, Joe.
Well, everybody who learns to ride, they've got to start out like a tenderfoot.
Oh, tenderfoot. Whoever invented the word tenderfoot had no sense of direction. Imagine me with this hat on a horse yet. Can you... Now, my scouts inform me that your voice is quite familiar to folks down there in Texas.
Well, I hope it is, Mr. Allen. To help pay my way through law school, I've been doing radio announcing at a station KTBC there in Austin.
KTBC there in Austin, huh? And since you're studying law, I know you must be active in the debating society. Now, what would you like to do on our program tonight?
Well, Mr. Allen, perhaps to remind us all that this country is one of the few spots left on earth where civil liberties are neither a promise nor a memory, but an everyday reality, our nation on December 15th commemorates the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights. And in connection with this, I have a few words I'd like to say.
Well, you go right ahead, Joseph. Ladies and gentlemen, the University of Texas most talented undergraduate, Joseph Fitz.
Now, old Thomas Jefferson, he said one day, "The people have got to be protected." I won't be here for very long, so come be here for very long, so come what may, their rights have got to be respected. Such a prophetic fellow. And according to his lights, he wrote a bill, the Bill of Rights. All of our problems, all of ill of them, contain a solution. The first of which, please note, respecting an establishment, or the exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of their grievances. So you see, young man, you can say what you like, you can print what you like, you can print what you like, you can print what like, you can meet whom you like, if you get it through your head, that bed, quote,
make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech.
And to petition the governress of their grievances. That's the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights.
The Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights.
Don't lose it. Don't lose it.
Well said. Thank you. It was fun, Joe. And And thanks to the University of Texas for letting you come up to join us here tonight. Now, next week, ladies and gentlemen, our college next week, ladies and gentlemen, our college next week, ladies and gentlemen, our college next week, ladies and gentlemen, our college, Oklahoma. After hearing the three competition finalists over stations KOMA, Oklahoma City, and KTUL, Tulsa, the Oklahoma students held their election. Ballots have just been counted, and the winner is Jack Wilson. We'll be looking for you next Wednesday, Jack. Well, all right, Jimmy.
Thank you, Fred. Action speaks louder than words, ladies and gentlemen. For example...
Put a little more expression in it, Jimmy.
Did you say something, friend?
I said put a little more expression into your reading, if you don't mind, Jimmy.
Fred, you're not trying to tell me how to do this commercial,
well,
are you?
No, Jimmy, I'm just suggesting. I'm not trying to...
I've been reading commercials for
years. Well, I know that, but after...
When I read a commercial, it's red.
Well, I realize that, but this particular commercial could stand a little more expression, Jimmy.
Why, that's ridiculous. For your information, Mr. Allen, nobody can read this commercial any better than I'm reading it.
Look, Jimmy, I don't want to argue, but I will bet you $5 that I can do a better job than you are doing right now.
You'll bet me $5?
Yes, and I'll ask the audience to be the judge.
Oh, fine.
Now, never mind, Jimmy. Don't, not yet. Wait till I get through. You just listen.
Okay, it's a bet.
It's a bet. All right, here I go. Action speaks louder than words. For example, words can't possibly be as convincing as the action of Texaco Fire Chief, the emergency duty action of a gasoline designed for fire engines, ambulances, and other emergency duty vehicles. Now, up to now, I'm better. Do you agree? Up to now. Just step on the starter with Texaco Fire Chief in the tank. Just that one quick start will tell you more than a million words. Try Fire Chief action. Feel Fire Chief's sustained power. Check the long mileage. Now I'm coming into the finish, you see, where I completely overwhelm. Yes, if you want action that speaks louder than words, try a Texaco dealer and famous Fire Chief, the emergency duty gasoline at regular gasoline prices. There you see, Jimmy, that's what I mean. I leave it to you, folks, which, I mean, after all. Jimmy, you're the mind.
All right, you.
Texaco Workshop Players. This is the only little theater group to ever have a performance of Uncle Tom's Cabin foreclosed by the FHA. Now, tonight, they dedicate their drama to that gallant body of men, the New York Department of Sanitation. This opus is called How Clean Is My Alley? or Don't Pick Up Anything You See in the Street. It may be a collector's item. Music, maestro.
Music, maestro.
Wait,
always the same thing.
Quiet, please.
The same routine every week.
Wait a minute. Who is that mumbling in the audience? What is it you want, sir?
I want something new. Every week it's one long pan or hillbillies.
And you want something new?
Yeah, something timely. Why don't you play a sketch to remind people to do their Christmas shopping early?
Look, brother, that's one of the things that is wrong with people today. People are slogan happy.
Why, do your Christmas shopping early has been a slogan for 20 years.
All right, so it has. And in 20 years, only one man has reacted to that slogan. He did his Christmas shopping early, and that slogan ruined his life. Did you ever hear of Homer Preble's?
No.
Well, sit down there, stranger. I'll tell you the story of Homer Preble's, the man who did his Christmas shopping early. Homer Preble's was what Dr. Gallup might call an average man. Homer was a white-collar worker and 100% slogan conscious. For Homer was exposed to his first slogan at the age of 3. One day as he sat in the nursery with an interpreter explaining his blocks, little Homer heard a voice over the radio say,
your mother you want cornies now.
No sooner had Homer heard his first slogan than he obeyed that childish impulse and ran to his mother and said,
Mama, I want cornies now.
Later, Homer survived adolescence some way, and when he heard the slogan, two can live as cheaply as one, Homer got married. He saw his dentist twice a year. He bought his wife the right soap chips. And when he heard the slogan, do it now, he even asked his boss for a raise. Homer's boss said,
no, Preble.
Ain't I worth more money, Mr. Hassam?
That is beside the point, Preble.
I know. As I came in, you turned away.
Exactly.
I'll get a cake of Lifebuoy soap tonight.
That's the stuff, Preble. You'll be a vice president in no time.
And so Homer went through life responding to every slogan instantly. But on the morning of December 5th, 1938, Homer Preble saw the slogan that was to be his downfall, to disrupt his entire life. Fanning the hot breakfast coffee with his morning newspaper, an ad caught Homer's eye. He said,
Look what it says here in the paper.
Do your Christmas shopping early.
Yeah, where's my Mickey Mouse sweatshirt?
Where are you off to, Homer?
I'm doing my Christmas shopping early. You don't got a call.
Leaving the house at a dog trot, Homer arrived at the big department store. Except for some men working about, the store was empty. As Homer entered, a floor walker approached him. The floor walker said,
What are you doing in here?
I want to get a hot water bottle for my Aunt Aggie.
Oh, we should stop decorating the store for Christmas. Drop everything because you want a hot water bottle for your Aunt Aggie.
That's for Christmas, though. I see.
It's 20 days to Christmas. Why don't you go home?
Well, I'm doing my Christmas shopping early.
Oh, a wise guy, huh? How do I know you ain't sniffing around here early to get a line on our Christmas decorations?
Darn it, mister.
You look like mail order Joe. How do I know you ain't a spy from Sears Roebuck?
Look, don't bother. I'll go over to Macy's.
I knew it. A Macy man.
Yeah, but wait.
Brother, I'll put some decorations on you that Macy can't copy. Take this.
Dude.
2 hours later, Homer, battered and unconscious, was found lying outside the store. He was carried home by two Boy Scouts who split a good deed for that day. For many weeks, Homer lay in a coma. There was no Christmas present for Aunt Aggie that year, but sunshine and clean living finally got in their dirty work, and by December 1931-9, Homer was as good as secondhand. I lost 8 years there. We'll never get off the air. Resolved to do his Christmas shopping early, Homer bustled into the Mammoth department store. A floor walker swept forward to meet him.
Good morning, sir. Welcome.
Look, I want to get a hot water bottle for my Aunt Aggie.
I shall give you my personal attention.
All I want is...
Oh, 165.
Yes, sir.
This way, please.
Who's 165?
He's one of our new salesmen.
165, report, Miss Kincaid.
This gentleman is a customer, 165. Now, you know what a customer looks like. I'll test you.
I'll come through, sir.
We shall see. This gentleman wants a hot water bottle. I want you to sell him a pair of snowshoes.
But I want a hot water bottle.
Quiet, please. We're testing. Go ahead, 165.
Yes, sir. Now, sir, what is your pleasure?
I want a hot water bottle for my Aunt Aggie.
What your Aunt Aggie needs is snowshoes. Now, if she get out the snow and exercise, your Aunt Aggie's circulation would improve. She wouldn't need a hot water bottle. Shall I wrap these snowshoes?
Well, I don't want snowshoes, I told you. I want a hot water bottle.
What's wrong with these snowshoes?
Nothing.
Then what are we waiting for?
You got your hand in my collar.
And I'm not taking it out, brother, until you know when.
Okay, I got to breathe. Give me the snowshoes.
A sale, Mr. Kincaid!
Congratulations, 165. You're going places.
What about me? Where am I going?
You know where you can go.
With snowshoes?
His Christmas money gone and carrying a greasy snowshoe under each arm, Homer trudged wearily home. No hot water bottle for Aunt Aggie this Christmas, but the snowshoes were stored in a clothes closet. Another year fled by, and soon it was December 1940. Homer was off again to do his Christmas shopping early. Intent on exchanging his snowshoes for the hot water bottle for Aunt Aggie, Homer mushed his way into the Mammoth department store. Placing the snowshoes akimbo on the counter, he said to the clerk,
I want to exchange these snowshoes for a hot water bottle.
Goody, I'll call the manager. Mr. Pennypacker.
Come in.
When I get the hot water bottle.
Quiet, will you? Here's Mr. Pennypacker.
Well, Griswold, I'm a busy man. What is it you want?
This gentleman has snowshoes.
Has no shoes, eh? Everybody should wear shoes. You'll catch cold, chum, going around in stocking feet.
Who's in their stocking feet? I got shoes.
Griswold, didn't you just tell me this man has no shoes?
Well, no, sir. He has shoes, but also he has snowshoes.
You say he has shoes?
Yes, Mr. Pennypacker.
And still he has no shoes?
Yes, sir.
Griswold, you're drunk. Drinking on duty is a violation. Turn in your gardenia. You're fired.
I can explain.
I doubt it, but carry on.
The last Christmas, I came in here to buy my Aunt Aggie a hot water bottle.
That's perfectly clear. Go on.
But instead, through no fault of mine, I get snowshoes.
That's what I've been trying to tell you, Mr. Pennypacker.
How could this lummox purchase snowshoes?
From the salesman who sells snowshoes.
We have a shoe salesman here who sells snowshoes. He's fired. Now, what can I do for you, sir?
Look. See this?
Yes.
What is it?
It is a package.
Look inside. What do you see?
Two tennis rackets.
You're nuts. Them snowshoes.
I know them snowshoes. They're tennis rackets.
Mr. Penny Packer, I resign.
So do I.
Just go off.
Don't ask us. We don't work here.
He ran out of the store yelling, I am a hot water bottle. He was rushed away to a psychopathic ward, and for 6 months, Homer thought he was a hot water bottle, and every time he saw a pair of bare feet, he'd lie down. But finally, Homer stopped seeing feet, and this year it was a different story. Now tonight, Homer Preble's fully recovered, is here to tell us about it himself. What have you got to say, Homer?
Your slogans is a curse.
One slogan caused all of your trouble.
Yeah, do your Christmas shopping early.
Well, did you finally get your Christmas shopping done?
Yeah, this year I got Aunt Aggie a hot water bottle.
Congratulations. And how did you do it, Homer?
I done my Christmas shopping early.
You mean the slogan finally worked?
Yeah, but I had to do my shopping good and early.
How early, Homer?
I was in the store before it opened up.
Got your hot water bottle.
Yeah, and 30 days for breaking and entering.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the true story of Homer Preble's, the victim of a slogan, do your Christmas shopping early. Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us tonight. Next week, our guest will be Miss Luella Parsons, Hollywood's first lady of the columns and the winner of the Texaco College competition at the University of Oklahoma. This is Fred Allen saying Oklahoma. This is Fred Allen saying good night. Good night.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.